Thank you, Brother Aaron.
Tonight, our exhortation is going to be given by Brother Al Bryan. And his subject is the Yahweh name. Brother Al.
Good evening, everyone. Find my microphone here. Okay. Is that on? There we go. How's that? Is that on? Move it up. Tricky little things. All right. How about that? Can y'all hear me in the back? Okay, good. All right, we'll start over. Good evening.
Good evening.
We'll start with the word that Brother Murray brought to us earlier, and that was the word opportunity. So we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all this evening, and my sister wife and I and family members that are here, which is most of our ecclesial members, also appreciate the opportunity to be here this week, and we're enjoying the classes and the talks, and there may be some of our ecclesial members online, so we all bring you the loving greetings of the brethren from the Bonaire Christadelphian Ecclesia. Tonight, we are going to speak on, yes, the Yahweh name, and I'd like to begin by going to the book of Exodus, chapter 6. Verses 6 to 8. Exodus 6 to 8. Wherefore say unto the children of Israel, I am Yahweh, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh your God, which bringeth you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land concerning the which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And I will give it you for an heritage. I am Yahweh. And let's continue that thought over in Acts 15th chapter. If you turn there. And we're going to read verses 14 to 17. Simon hath declared how God at the first did visit the Gentiles to take out of them a people for his name. And to this agree the words of the prophets as it is written. After this I will return, and I will build again the tabernacle of David, which is fallen down, and I will build again the ruins thereof, and I will set it up, that the residue of men might seek after Yahweh, and all the Gentiles upon whom my name is called, saith Yahweh, who doeth all these things. So going back to the word opportunity, Brother Joel also presented an opportunity when he found this nice board over here, so I could add an additional slide to my talk, to try to tie in some things that have been said, which I think have been very fitting. So we started off with a talk concerning eight individuals who are listed on the board there. And so we had, and we also had additional talks and classes after that to add some additional names. So if you'll remember, we had Ishmael and Isaac, David and Solomon, Hezekiah, Josiah, Maher, Shalal, Hashbaz, Cyrus, Ezekiel, John, and Jesus. I hope I didn't leave anybody out that's been talked about so far. So in Brother Robbie's class, he talked about the eight individuals who were named before their birth. So I'll just offer you a question, considering all the names, not just the eight that Brother Robbie presented. Did Yahweh know all the names of these individuals before they were born, whether that's recorded, whether that's recorded or not? So obviously eight, it's recorded that Yahweh revealed revealed their names before they were born. Did he know the others? Consider this in light of the fact that these are all individuals in whom Yahweh would manifest his purpose in some way. And so we've already heard, and we're not going to rehearse everything that's been said, how even their names reveal some aspect of Yahweh and in pointing forward to the Son, the Lord Jesus. So if that is so, if Yahweh did know all of them, when did Yahweh know the names of these individuals? A month or two before? 100 years? A millennium? We know Cyrus in particular. I think that was revealed at least 150 years before he was born. But when did Yahweh know? Let's go back to Acts, the 15th chapter again, and we'll read verse 18, which says, "Known unto God are all his works from the beginning of the world." From the beginning of the world. Yahweh has a purpose which he has known from the very beginning. Before time itself, we would suggest. He has known all these individuals. Moreover, I would suggest that he knows us or has known us likewise, although the name by which we hope to be known of him has not yet been revealed. No doubt, however, in my mind, like Josiah, Hezekiah, Ezekiel, Yahshua, the Yahweh name will be manifested in our name and in our nature, God willing, if so approved at the judgment. So with that said, let's delve into our subject of the Yahweh name and God manifestation. Let's see if we can get this to work. We're going to go back to 1890. And the Lithuanian-born Eliezer ben Yehuda, a Jewish immigrant to Palestine, from Europe. Well, he, along with some associates, founded the Council for the Hebrew Language, and it's given up there in Hebrew, I can't pronounce it. And he worked tirelessly for about 30 years to resurrect, if not reconstruct, the Hebrew language as a national language for the Jewish people, which had been dormant for nearly 2,000 years. And though dying in 1922, before his work was finished, and his wife, his second wife there, was very much involved in the completion of those volumes. He did complete 11 out of what would become 16 volumes of his modern Hebrew dictionary. And maybe there's been other dictionaries added to that, I'm not sure. The Hebrew language, however, dormant as it might have been from the standpoint of daily use, was not really dead, but it was hidden. It was hidden from the Jews, who mostly had adopted the languages of their land of their dispersion. And it was hidden from the Gentiles, particularly the English, because the King James translators usurped the original titles of deity in the Hebrew text with generic titles of Lord and God, as well as changing a few of the other words to fit the Orthodox mindset. The loss of the original meanings of Lord and God in Hebrew, coupled with the loss of understanding among both Jew and Christian, I'll say Christian, quote unquote, as to who God really is, including his purpose and plan, prompted Brother Thomas to write a series of articles in the 1850s that was entitled Mosaic and Nazarene Teaching Concerning God. It was a very lengthy season. It was later compiled into a book, or into the back of a book, called Phanerosis, which, as you all know, means manifestation. But why name a book about the titles of deity manifestation? Brother Thomas chose that name because The Hebrew titles of deity reveal the very nature of the mysteries concerning the manifestation of the name of Yahweh, His Son Jesus, and the subsequent putting on the name of His saints, or those in Christ, and the ultimate revelation of that name in the earth, subjects that have stupefied the masses for more than 20 centuries. Those who bear the name, the Yahweh name, mentally and morally, being accounted heirs of the promises to Abraham by adoption federally, and hence becoming citizens of the Commonwealth of Israel spiritually, are the manifestation of deity in the seed form, awaiting the translation of their bodies, our bodies, into the physical substance of the deity, the Almighty, Yahweh. These saints, among whom we hope to be, will be made equal to the angels, the Elohim. They will become the material manifestation of Yahweh's glory, wisdom, and power throughout the earth, by which the word of the prophets will come to pass, the well-known Habakkuk 2:14. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of Yahweh as the waters cover the sea. This evening, we would like to delve particularly into the meaning of the name of Yahweh as it relates to the subject of God manifestation. The Yahweh name is often termed the memorial name. It takes us back to the very roots of biblical history as recorded by the inspired pen of Moses. Genesis chapter 2 verse 4 states, "These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created, in the day that Yahweh Elohim made the earth and the heavens." Almost every Hebrew word may be traced back to a root idea contained in that word. In the case of Yahweh, from a composition of the Hebrew Yah, the eternal, and Hayah, meaning to become or come to pass, we derive the well-known He who will be or He who shall be. And Christadelphians have long recognized not only the memorial aspect of the name, but the prophetical aspect of the name as well. For Yahweh will be manifested in a multitude of redeemed ones from all ages, made possible by the first fruits of His work in the earth, that being His Son, Yeshua, Messiah. These together will be the cherubim of Ezekiel's prophecy, the four carpenters and four chariots of Zechariah, the seraphim or burning ones of Isaiah, the four living ones and 24 elders of the apocalypse who will reign on the earth for 1,000 years. As every Hebrew word is traced to a root idea, additionally, every Hebrew letter composing every Hebrew word can be traced to a root idea. Each has its own numerical value as well. For instance, Aleph, the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, has the numerical value of 1. It is a word picture of an ox head. Thus the children's rhyme goes, "Aleph is an ox which will push with its horn. The ox leads the way of the plowman, sowing seeds, and presents a metaphor of our master as one who leads us and teaches us. He is the servant and burden bearer, as well as head and master of all those who sow the seed after him." Likewise, the four letters that compose the name of Yahweh, called by the Hebrews the Holy Tetragram, each have their story to tell, but together connect the whole picture of God manifestation, both now and in the future. So this we'll consider as time allows. So we'll begin with Yod, the first letter of Yahweh, and the 10th letter of the Hebrew alphabet. 10 is the number of ordinal perfection and completion, as seen in such applications as David slaying his 10,000s, Gideon's 10 servants, the parable of the 10 virgins, Yahweh coming with 10,000s of his saints, and so on. In that sense, the letter may also represent the salvation of those who will complete the Yahweh name. Yod is the smallest letter of the Hebrew alphabet, looking like a backwards apostrophe. It forms the beginning primary shape of all Hebrew letters, which I think is interesting. If you have a little chart with Hebrew letters written on it, look at how they're formed. Every letter begins with the shape of Yod. It also is sometimes inserted in the Hebrew text as a silent dot, a point of energy, giving letters their final form. Thus we see a connection with Yahweh himself as the beginning and the end. Being the smallest letter, it can also represent humility. For example, when Jacob's name was changed to Israel, the only letter that remained as part of his original name, perhaps as a token of his character, was Yod. In Numbers 12:3, where Moses is called the most humble man, an extra silent Yod is inserted in the Hebrew text. Yod signifies a word picture, in a word picture, an open hand, a hand providing direction, in essence, keeping the way of the tree of life. Yahweh's invitation to life is such a hand as this, a hand that is not willing that any believing in him should perish. Thus, Yahweh has been manifest in the Son of his right hand, even Jesus, who was made strong for his people, opening the way of salvation for all to see through the Spirit word. Far from being a clenched fist, pounding fearful subjects into submission, or driving the sheep, as we were taught today regarding shepherding, he isn't driving the sheep. He's rather giving them direction. Yahweh takes pleasure in those who willingly take hold of salvation, those that respond to the voice of their Creator. Let's look at a couple of references now. Let's go to Psalm 60, and I'd like to read verses 3 to 5. Psalm 60, verse 3. Hast thou showed thy people hard things? Hast thou made us to drink the wine of astonishment? Thou hast given a banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth, Selah, that thy beloved may be delivered. Save with thy right hand and hear me, pointing forward to the Christ. Psalm 80, verses 17 to 19. Let thy hand be upon the man of thy right hand, upon the son of man, whom thou madest strong for thyself. So will not we go back from thee. Quicken us, and we will call upon thy name. Turn us again, O Yahweh, Elohim of hosts. Cause thy face to shine, and we shall be saved. He who shall be. Isaiah 42 and verses 6 to 9. I, Yahweh, have called thee in righteousness and will hold thine hand. I will hold thine hand and will keep thee and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. I am Yahweh, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Revelation 3, verse 20. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him and he with me. Yahweh's invitation to the tree of life, as expressed in these verses, is much like the little letter Yod, like Elijah's still small voice that must be listened for carefully. It cannot be found in the noise and clatter of man's wisdom, in the commerce of the age, much less the entertainment. It's not going to be found in social media, but only by the diligent reading and quiet study of the Bible. And with that, the exercise of a meek and quiet spirit in his vineyard. May we each incline our ears and listen closely for each whisper of Yahweh's word. And young ones and young people, may you soon take hold of the Son at the right hand. For only then will you find true direction and purpose in your lives. Next, we'll consider the letter He, the second and fourth letter in the name of Yahweh, and fifth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The number 5 we regard as a number of grace, representing grace, and the fact that it appears twice in Yahweh's name is significant. In Exodus 26, we are informed that the tabernacle, which I would look at as a physical model of the way of salvation, it was constructed of two sets of five curtains, coupled together by 50 loops of glue. The boards on each side of the tabernacle were fastened together with 5 bars, for a total of 10. The door of the tabernacle and the gate of the court were each held up by 5 pillars. The length, breadth, and height of the court, all divisible by 5. The ingredients of the holy incense, divisible by 5. The altar, 5 cubits in each direction. The peace offering was 5 rams, 5 he-goats, 5 lambs of the first year. So time would fail us to list other instances where this may occur, all indicating a double portion of grace from Yahweh that a remnant of the race might be redeemed to fulfill his purpose. The letter He literally means low sea, and is fashioned after the shape of a window or a door. This also demonstrates the double measure of grace that we have received from Yahweh. How so? Because he has provided the way of salvation, a window, the door, as it were, and he has also given us the information or the key on how we can successfully enter in. Let's go to Psalm 53, verse 2. God looks down from heaven on the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. John 8:56. Gospel of John 8:56. Your father Abraham rejoiced, what? To see my day. And he saw it and was glad. He saw it and was glad. Oh, I also want to read verse 58. Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am, or I am he. What did he mean? he was the one that the Yahweh name was pointing to. When Yahweh looked to see if there were any who would seek him out, he chose Abram from among the Gentiles and called him out of his native country of Ur, of the Chaldees, to show him a land that he would receive and his seed as an eternal reward on account of his faith. And let's go back and look at just a couple of verses there. Genesis 17. And verse 5. Genesis 17, verse 5. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abram, but thy name shall be Abraham, for a father of many nations I have made thee. And verse 15 as well, please. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. Curious. Well, as you probably know, when Yahweh changed the names of Abram to Abraham and Sarai to Sarah, he but added the fifth letter of the alphabet, hey, to each of their names in the fifth position, revealing unmerited favor to Abraham and his seed through the Abrahamic covenant. Thus, Abram became the father of a multitude, and Sarai became princess, foreshadowing a future multitude that will compose the bride of Christ. These blessings of Abraham are there for all who are willing to seek for Yahweh, those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, who will answer the call and enter into his gates with singing and into his courts with praise. For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. That's from Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14. I'd also like to read another two verses in Matthew 7. Verses 7 and 8. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. And he that seeketh, findeth. And to him that knocketh, this door, this window, will be opened. Turn also over to the Gospel of John again, chapter 10. Verses 7 to 9. And Jesus... Then said Jesus unto them again, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. Acts chapter 17. Acts 17, 24. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and good things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men, for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if happily they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. He's not very far from us, That door is near to us. Revelation 3:8. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. For thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. And that's given to the Philadelphian Ecclesia, and much more can be said about that, but we'll just leave it there for now. So let's go on to Vav. Last but not least, we'll consider Vav, the third letter of Yahweh and the sixth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It may seem strange that six, the number of man, as we often appoint that, would be associated with Yahweh, but we are dealing with the sublime subject of God manifestation, beginning with Messiah, and adding to him as many as will respond to the hope of his calling. The Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy regarding this great mystery of how Yahweh would reveal his glory among men through six primary principles. So if you would please turn over to 1 Timothy, the third chapter, and we're going to read verses 14 to 16. Again, Paul revealing six primary principles concerning God manifestation. So 1 Timothy 3, verse 14, he says, "These things I write unto thee, hoping to come unto thee shortly. But if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the ecclesia of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth, and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness." And so here's his list. Great is the mystery of godliness. One, God was manifest in the flesh. Two, justified in the spirit. Three, seen of angels. Four, preached unto Gentiles. Five, believed on in the world. Six, received up into glory. So again, we see Messiah, as well as those who believe in him, at the very center of Yahweh's purpose, that is to say, how his glory will be revealed in the earth. In any case, in our limited understanding of these letters, Vav appears to pull the whole picture together, and that is fitting, considering that Vav means a hook or a nail, such as a tent peg, that which binds or joins together. That which binds or joins together. So in my mind, I'm drawn to the construction of the tabernacle. A whole other set of lessons there. Where pillar and post, curtain and rod are all held together by hooks and pegs. The metaphor likewise points forward to our Redeemer, who has joined Jew and Gentile together into one house through his covenant sacrifice. So let's go over and read. Probably know where I'm going. In Ephesians chapter 2, beginning at verse 11. Ephesians 2:11. "Wherefore remember that ye, being in time past, Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands, that at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, ye who were sometimes far off are made nigh by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, who hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, for to make in himself a twain one new man, so making peace. And that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the stake, having slain the enmity thereby, and came and preached peace to you which were afar off, and to them that were nigh. For through him We both have access by one Spirit into the Father. Now, therefore, you are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building, fitly framed together, groweth into an holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for an habitation, or a dwelling place, a manifestation for God through the Spirit. This joining together is a permanent arrangement, as permanent as the covenant itself, so long as we remain faithful. We understand that the everlasting covenant was sealed by the sacrificial offering of Christ, that is to say, his blood. By the sin offering upon the stake, Christ put to death the enmity of sin nature in his body, destroying him that had the power of death, that is, the diabolos, and the permanence of the sealing of the covenant by the offering of the covenant sacrifice is a subject, as you know, that pervades the whole of Scripture and has a connection with this letter, the metaphor of the nail or stake here before us. So let's look at a couple of familiar passages to kind of drive this home. Let's go back to Genesis 3:15. Genesis 3:15, and I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and thou shalt and it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. So keep that in mind as we also look at Judges, the fourth chapter, verses 21 to 23. And this is the account of Deborah and Barak against Jabin and Sisera of the Canaanites, and Jael, who comes into the picture here in verse 21. Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent and took a hammer in her head and went softly unto him, that is Sisera of the Canaanites, and smote the nail into his temples, and fastened it to the ground, for he was fast asleep and weary, so he died. And behold, as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to meet him and said unto him, Come, and I will show thee the man whom thou seekest. And when he came into her tent, behold, Sisera lay dead, and the nail was in his temples, the bruising of the serpent's head. So God subdued on that day Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the children of Israel. Now, as we know, in each of these references, Messiah is portrayed as the one who would fatally wound the serpent system. First, as regarding his own sin nature at his first coming, and then at his second, sin in its global, ecclesiastical, and political manifestations. At which time, Messiah will dash the nations to pieces and rule as sovereign over the whole earth. The prophet speaks to both aspects in the 22nd chapter. If you would turn there, Isaiah 22. And this is another man of sign that could have been added to the list over to my left. Isaiah 22. Beginning at verse 20, and it shall come to pass in that day that I will call my servant Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and I will clothe him with thy robe and strengthen him with thy girdle, and I will commit my government into his hand, and he shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah, and the key of the house of David will I lay upon his shoulder, so he shall open and none shall shut, and he shall shut, and none shall open. Let's see, I think I'm going to go through verse 25. And I will fasten him as a nail in a sure place. And he shall be for a glorious throne to his house, to his father's house, and they shall hang upon him all the glory of his father's house, the offspring and the issue, all vessels of small quantity, from the vessels of cups even to the vessels of flagons. In that day, saith Yahweh of hosts, shall the nail that is fastened in the sure place be removed, and be cut down, and fall, and the burden that was upon it shall be cut off, for Yahweh hath spoken it. So Eliakim means El shall set up, and represents the role of Messiah to build again the tabernacle of David, which has fallen down. But prior to this day of glory, when it is filled up again, not only would Jerusalem again be eclipsed, the kingdom overthrown, and the people taken captive, but Messiah himself would also be cut off, which is the removal of the nail here in verse 25. As a necessary step required to ratify the covenants of promise, but Yahweh has also raised up Jesus from the dead, and he has been established as a sure place for the people of the covenant. Moreover, he and the glorified saints will be established in Jerusalem forever. Together, they will comprise Yahweh's spiritual temple, style New Jerusalem in the Apocalypse, filled with vessels of honor, as is mentioned here in Isaiah, for the honor and for the glory and good pleasure of the King. In Eureka, Brother Thomas comments on this subject. He writes, the word of the only wise deity, when incarnated, is therefore fitly represented by a nail in a sure place. So again, we're thinking of this letter, Vav, the stake, the nail, the tent peg. Of this nail, the spirit of Zechariah said that it should come out of Judah, the sure place in which it is to be fastened. Designates as Yahweh Elohim's holy place, in which Ezra and a remnant of the captivity returned from Babylon were then sojourning, that is, in Jerusalem. Then a peaceable, quiet, and established habitation. And that will also be its future. While we're in Isaiah, let's look over chapter 32, verse 18. Chapter 32, verse 18. And my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. A tremendous contrast with what we see today. The 33rd chapter of Isaiah, verse 20. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnities. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem, a quiet habitation, a tabernacle. And listen to this concerning this stake, this nail, this ball. A tabernacle that shall not be taken down. Not one of the stakes thereof shall ever be removed. Neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. So in conclusion, this has been a brief synopsis of the memorial name. Much more, I'm sure, could be said. But sufficient to draw the attention of the importance of the message contained in the name. As adopted sons and daughters of Yahweh, it is necessary that we, like Abraham, not lose sight of the hope of which we are the present stewards. Certainly on a national basis, Israel failed to manifest the name, for which reason the glory of Yahweh departed the temple in the days of Ezekiel, Brother Scott mentioned, and stood in the figure upon the Mount of Olives, and then departed the earth. 5 centuries later, Yahweh's Son likewise departed the earth. He departed in a cloud to the right hand of the Father from the same summit. When he returns to the same summit, following the judgment seat, it will be with a great cloud of witnesses. Yahweh manifests in the redeemed. The Mount of Olives will cleave. Waters will burst forth from Mount Zion. in the figure of the word that will flow out to the world from immortalized brethren who have received the name and it is written in their foreheads. We have seen that the name Yahweh reveals the purpose of the God of Israel. In many aspects, we're able to comprehend the grandeur of His mercy, the hope of His calling, and the absolute, unalterable truth of His Word by considering its component parts. To summarize, Yahweh has extended an open hand to us unto salvation. He has looked to see if there were any to understand and to seek Him out. He has established for us a sure place through the Word manifest in the flesh of His Son, Jesus, now immortal, and joins together those afar off with the natural seed through the offering of His Son. And this blessing is for all who will seek Him out. All who desire to understand or see His purpose and enter therein. Such is the grace of Yahweh. So we'll close with two passages which are relevant, I think. Revelation 2:17. Revelation 2:17, for he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it. The third chapter, verse 12. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name.
Thank you.